"Ready to do it?" I say, pulling on my pack.
"Do what?"
says Rue. But by the way she bounces up, you can tell she's up for whatever I propose. "Today we take out the courier's food," I say.
"Really? How?"
You can see the glint of excitement in her eyes. In this way, she's exactly the opposite of Prim, for whom adventures are an ordeal. "No idea. Come on, we'll figure out a plan while we hunt," I say. We don't get much hunting done, though, because I'm too busy getting every scrap of information I can out of Rue about the courier's base. She's only been in to spy on them briefly, but she's observant. They have set up their camp beside the lake. Their supply stash is about 30 yards away. During the day, they've been leaving another tribute, the boy from District 3, to watch over the supplies. "The boy from District 3?" I ask. "He's working with them?"
"Yes, he stays at the camp full time. He got stung too when they drew the tracker jackers in by the lake," says Rue. "I guess they agreed to let him live if he acted as their guard. But he's not very big."
"What weapons does he have?" I ask.
"Not much that I could see. A spear? He might be able to hold a few of us off with that, but Thresh could kill him easily,"
says Rue. "And the food's just out in the open?" I say. She nods. Something's not quite right about that whole setup.
"I know, but I couldn't tell what exactly," says Rue. "Katniss, even if you could get to the food, how would you get rid of it?"
"Burn it. Dump it in the lake. Soak it in fuel." I poke Rue in the belly just like I would Prim.
"Eat it,"
she giggles. "Don't worry, I'll think of something. Destroying things is much easier than making them." For a while, we dig roots, we gather berries and greens. We devise a strategy in hushed voices. And I come to know Rue, the oldest of six kids, fiercely protective of her siblings, who gives her rations to the younger ones, who forages in the meadows in a district where the peacekeepers are far less obliging than ours. Rue, who when you ask her what she loves most in the world, replies, of all things,
"Music."
"Music?" I say. In our world, I rank music somewhere between hair ribbons and rainbows in terms of usefulness. At least a rainbow gives you a tip about the weather. "You have a lot of time for that?"
"We sing at home, at work, too. That's why I love your pin," she says,
pointing to the mockingjay that I've again forgotten about. "You have mockingjays?" I ask.
"Oh, yes. I have a few that are my special friends. We can sing back and forth for hours. They carry messages for me,"
she says. "What do you mean?" I say.
"I'm usually up highest, so I'm the first to see the flag that signals quitting time. There's a special little song I do,"
says Rue. She opens her mouth and sings a little four-note run in a sweet, clear voice.
"And the mockingjays spread it around the orchard. That's how everyone knows to knock off," she continues. "They can be dangerous, though, if you get too near their nest, but you can't blame them for that."
I unclasp the pin and hold it out to her. "Here, you take it. It has more meaning for you than me."
"Oh, no," says Rue, closing my fingers back over the pin. "I like to see it on you. That's how I decided I could trust you. Besides, I have this."
She pulls a necklace woven out of some kind of grass from her shirt. On it hangs a roughly carved wooden star. Or maybe it's a flower.
"It's a good luck charm."
"Well, it's worked so far," I say, pinning the mockingjay back on my shirt. "Maybe you should just stick with that." By lunch, we have a plan. By early afternoon, we are poised to carry it out. I help Rue collect and place the wood for the first two campfires. The third she'll have time for on her own. We decide to meet afterward at the site where we ate our first meal together. The stream should help guide me back to it. Before I leave, I make sure Rue's well stocked with food and matches. I even insist she take my sleeping bag in case it's not possible to rendezvous by nightfall.
"What about you? Won't you be cold?"
she asks. "Not if I pick up another bag down by the lake," I say. "You know, stealing isn't illegal here," I say with a grin. At the last minute, Rue decides to teach me her Mockingjay signal, the one she gives to indicate the day's work is done.
It might not work, but if you hear the Mockingjay singing it, you'll know I'm okay, only I can't get back right away.
Are there many Mockingjays here? I ask.
Haven't you seen them? They've got nests everywhere, she says.
I have to admit, I haven't noticed. Okay then. If all goes according to plan, I'll see you for dinner, I say. Unexpectedly, Ruth throws her arms around me. I only hesitate a moment before I hug her back.
You be careful, she says to me.
You too, I say. I turn and head back to the stream, feeling somehow worried about Rue being killed, about Rue not being killed and the two of us being left for last, about leaving Rue alone, about leaving Prim alone back home. No, Prim has my mother and Gail and a baker who has promised she won't go hungry. Rue has only me. Once I reach the stream, I have only to follow it down to the place I initially picked it up after the Tracker Jacker attack. I have to be cautious as I move along the water, though, because I find my thoughts preoccupied with unanswered questions, most of which concern PETA. The cannon that fired early this morning, did that signify his death? If so, how did he die? At the hand of a career? And was that in revenge for letting me live? I struggle again to remember that moment over Glimmer's body when he burst through the trees. But just the fact that he was sparkling leads me to doubt everything that happened. I must have been moving very slowly yesterday because I reached the shallow stretch where I took my bath in just a few hours. I stopped to replenish my water and add a layer of mud to my backpack. It seems bent on reverting to orange no matter how many times I cover it. My proximity to the careers' camp sharpens my senses, and the closer I get to them, the more guarded I am, pausing frequently to listen for unnatural sounds, an arrow already fitted into the string of my bow. I don't see any other tributes, but I do notice some of the things Rue has mentioned. Patches of the sweet berries, a bush with the leaves that healed my stings, clusters of Tracker Jacker nests in the vicinity of the tree I was trapped in, and here and there, the black and white flash of a Mockingjay wing in the branches high over my head. When I reach the tree with the abandoned nest at the foot, I pause a moment to gather my courage. Rue has given specific instructions on how to reach the best spying place near the lake from this point. Remember, I tell myself, you're the hunter now, not them. I get a firmer grasp on my bow and go on. I make it to the copse Rue has told me about, and again have to admire her cleverness. It's right at the edge of the wood, but the bushy foliage is so thick down low, I can easily observe the career camp without being spotted. Between us lies the flat expanse where the games began. There are four tributes: the boy from District 1, Cato and the girl from District 2, and a scrawny, ashen-skinned boy who must be from District 3. He made almost no impression on me at all during our time in the Capitol. I can remember almost nothing about him, not his costume, not his training score, not his interview. Even now, as he sits there fiddling with some kind of plastic box, he's easily ignored in the presence of his large and domineering companions. But he must be of some value, or they wouldn't have bothered to let him live. Still, seeing him only adds to my sense of unease over why the careers would possibly leave him as a guard, why they have allowed him to live at all. All four tributes seem to still be recovering from the Tracker Jacker attack. Even from here, I can see the large swollen lumps on their bodies. They must not have had the sense to remove the stingers, or if they did, not known about the leaves that healed them. Apparently, whatever medicines they found in the cornucopia have been ineffective. The cornucopia sits in its original position, but its insides have been picked clean. Most of the supplies held in crates, burlap sacks, and plastic bins are piled neatly in a pyramid in what seems a questionable distance from the camp. Others are sprinkled around the perimeter of the pyramid, almost mimicking the layout of supplies around the cornucopia at the onset of the games. A canopy of netting that, aside from discouraging birds, seems to be useless, shelters the pyramid itself. The whole setup is completely perplexing. The distance, the netting, and the presence of the boy from District 3. One thing's for sure, destroying those supplies is not going to be as simple as it looks. Some other factor is at play here, and I better stay put until I figure out what it is.